to the Belfast Men's Health Group podcast with Ralph McLean, who works for BBC Radio Ulster and is a country music presenter, among other things. Today, Ralph's going to tell us a wee bit about his job and how he got involved in radio. But before we start, Ralph, I want to thank you very much for agreeing to come on. So a big thank you. And I suppose, tell us a wee bit about Ralph McLean, a wee bit about your background, maybe a bit about your influences, and what sort of got you into radio and television.
Well, thanks for asking me, Paul. It's nice to chat with you. Yeah, I don't know how I would describe myself, really. Probably the jammiest get in the world, really, because I get to do what I've always loved, which is music, you know.
Yes.
And really, it's hard to count it as a real job, what I do, I suppose. It's making radio programs in the past, doing a lot of television work, and I have a production company, McLean Media, who make a lot of different things as well. Always, generally speaking, it's music and arts related and kind of culture related. So it's all that stuff that I love. So I've been getting away with it now for quite some time. So I consider myself extremely lucky. I don't know, you might call me, I suppose, a presenter, BBC presenter, mostly. That's what I tend to be known a bit more for. Is doing the radio shows and what have you. I dislike the term DJ because that summons up all kinds of Alan Partridge arseholery, yeah. You know, so it's fairly avoided at all costs, obviously. So DJ I wouldn't be mad fussed on, but suppose presenter or broadcaster, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy producing as well. I've been fortunate enough to produce a lot of different series, a lot of different programs for Radio Ulster and for Radio 2 and 6 Music and people like that. And I've been lucky because my passion for music has taken me all over the world, you know. Mm-hmm. It's taken me to festivals all over the world, musical gatherings all over the world. I've been Texas and Tupelo and Memphis and Toronto and all over Europe. And it's all been because of music. So I've been incredibly fortunate, you know. And for me, it's all about avoiding a real job, let's be honest. Let's cut the chase for them. It's about avoiding the 9-to-5 if I possibly can, because I've done it. And I didn't like it. So I had a look at it, didn't like it, and decided I'll try to do something to do with music. So very, very fortunate for years and years, and just keeping the head down and hoping that that the bosses don't spot how much fun I'm having, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you've done quite well. There's no doubt about it. I think I was reading that you've interviewed Tommy Lee Jones, Harrison Ford. I don't know if there's any truth in this. Tommy Lee Jones, Harrison Ford, Angelina Jolie. Is there any truth in any of them?
They're all absolutely true. I got a lift to the airport. I got a lift to the airport by Tommy Lee Jones in Texas after I did the interview with him. He's a lovely man. I was interviewing him for a Radio 2 documentary. This is one of my favourite stories. My mates call it the greatest hits. When I do the greatest hits tour, my Tommy Lee Jones story is always one of the greatest hits. And I asked at the end, I didn't have a hire car or anything. I'd got a cab out to meet him at his office. And he was beside the Alamo, as I remember. He was somewhere near the Alamo, probably enough, because that's the kind of place you'd expect him to be.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, I had no car, and I said to him, can I borrow your phone to phone a cab? And he's like, wouldn't hear of it, because he's a real Texas gentleman, like he's a real proper gent, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
So he says, I'll drive you to the airport. He's like, what departure lounge, blah, blah, blah. So he took me there. Must have taken 45 minutes, and it was really uncomfortable, because although he's a real Texas gentleman, he doesn't say much.
Yeah.
So he was sort of just sitting there staring at the window, being Tommy Lee Jones. I just kept looking at him thinking, Christ, I'm being driven to the airport by one of the men in black, you know.
Yeah.
So he was lovely, absolutely sweetheart, and but very curt and very sort of Texas, button-down Texas, you know. But lovely man. So, yeah, all those people, you know, it's incredible when you look back and you think of Tommy Lee Jones and Chandim in Texas, or interviewed Dolly Parton in her wee private studio in Nashville, and people like Angelina Jolie, and all those movie people. I did a lot of television work in the past, and a show I worked on called First Stop used to do those kind of TV junkets, you know, where you would see guys interview people in the Dorchester in London, and that means you would basically any big movie out. So I'd interview Tom Cruise and Harrison Ford and Dustin Hoffman and people like that, and Jackie Chan, all manner of people. And you would have 10 minutes with them in the Dorchester, you know, and it would all be filmed. And people think that's easy, but actually those are probably the hardest interviews, because those guys have been sitting talking rubbish 9 o'clock that morning. So if you can get anything out of them by 4:30, you're doing well. So all those things used to happen all the time. And because I was working in TV, and TV entertainment shows, you're as likely to meet Basil Brush as you are Billy Connolly. So, there was a lot of, you had to just basically adapt to anything. It was a great experience, and you can't put a price on that sort of experience. Years and years of interviewing anybody who passed by your mic, basically, So mm-hmm. lucky with all of that as well, and some amazing memories. And then occasionally you get, you do get the ones who really connect with yourself and people that you loved as a kid. And sitting down and doing proper career retrospective interviews with Van Morrison and stuff, I mean, that's a dream come true, because that's something you never imagined yourself doing. I grew up in Lisburn, mm-hmm. A housing estate in Lisburn, mm-hmm. as a music fanatic. And, I mean, you just don't imagine that you're ever going to be sitting in front of Harrison Ford, mm-hmm. after spending your childhood watching Star Wars. You can't really imagine that you're going to be sitting looking at Han Solo, and chatting to him about what I must admit was a very boring film. He was in a film with Liam Neeson. movie buffs out there may remember, or they may have managed to forget it. I think it was a submarine movie. I've forgotten the title even now. So it was a really drab film, and he was a bit of a drab man. But at the end of the day, you're sitting beside Han Solo, I had to catch myself on, because I was nearly drifting off a bit as he was answering. I just kept thinking about Star Wars, incredibly lucky. That didn't seem possible when I was a kid. Didn't seem possible mm-hmm. to be, in a wee place like Lisburn, growing up, like I say, in a housing estate. Now, I always loved music and always loved art and cinema and always loved all that stuff. My mum would have instilled a massive love of music in me, mm-hmm. Less so my dad. He was more sport and conservation and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. my mum was passionate music lover, and she played a church organ, and she always had music in the house. And so it's my mum, Iris, that I would have to thank for mm-hmm. for my lifelong love of music. And,
Can you sing?
It's the biggest cliche in the world, but music is an amazing thing, because it mm-hmm. never leaves you. It's always there for you, no matter what you're going through, no matter where you are, good times and bad. Music's there for you, and it always has an answer. It always has a tune to take you away and do something for you. So incredibly jammy, incredibly lucky. And when you mention some of those names, it amazes me. I'm like, how in God's name did that happen? It doesn't seem possible. But music's a great thing for bringing people together. So those people that you probably bought records by as a kid, or you had posters off on the wall, you can end up side by side with them and getting to know them. It's a strange world, I was a huge fan of The Jam when I was a kid.
Yes.
Paul Weller and The Jam were a great kind of entry musical drug for me, if you like, because it was through Weller that I got into a lot of the kind of rock stuff and the mod stuff and the soul stuff and even ska stuff and all sorts of things that I came to love. And I used to have posters of Paul Weller on my bedroom wall. I actually found a couple of them the other day, because clearing out my mother's house a while back after she passed, and mm-hmm. found a load of old posters that she'd kept in boxes up in the attic. And there's these ones of The Jam, and I had them pinned up to the wall. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've interviewed Paul Weller 5 or 6 times and got on really well. And I never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
When you're buying those records and you're going down to Caroline Music on a Saturday morning.
That's right.
And buying records. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine you're ever going to meet those guys and get on with them and have sort of conversations with them. So mm-hmm. it's been a funny old journey, as they say, and the X Factor, it's all about the journey in it. Mm-hmm. It's been a funny old journey, but it's been a great one at the same time. Like I say, as long as I can keep getting away with it, I'm happy enough. Yeah.
And you're happy to listen to, or you grew up listening to The Jam. What sort of brought you into country? Or would you listen to country music? Would you listen to rock and roll music? Would you listen to classical music?
Listened to everything.
Yeah.
I listened to everything. I still do, categories don't mean an awful lot to me, but obviously it's easier for radio stations to categorize what they're putting out, I suppose, really. And it's easier for record shops back in the day to categorize where the records are. But for me, it's all just music. And, my mum would have played absolutely everything. So I'd heard a lot of country in the house.
Yes.
Because yourself, you're growing up in Northern Ireland, you can't not hear country.
100%.
You know what I mean? And I don't even mean Irish country. I mean, you just couldn't not hear Hank Williams.
That's it. Johnny Cash.
Hank Williams is everywhere. Yeah. I saw the light. I used to hear it in house parties. And used to, all that old classic
brilliant
country music was everywhere, So mm-hmm. I'd have heard that. But I'd have heard rock and roll a lot as well. And, and the connections between early rock and roll and blues and country and all that. That's massive, and it's obvious as well. So it's, you can draw a direct line between, you know, Rock Around the Clock and Move It On Over. You know, there's very little difference between Hank Williams and Bill Haley. So I'd have heard it all, loved it all, and just kind of soaked it all up. And you know, I would have basically listened to anything that I heard in the house, and I'd have found out more. I was always very keen to investigate music. Maybe some people just like music as they hear it and just take it as they find it, but I always wanted to find out more about it. And you know, pre-internet, that wasn't that easy, to be honest. But you know, there was ways of digging into it, and you would order up albums, and you would find out books, get books at a library, and you know, and it was something I always wanted to do. I always wanted to know the history of music. I wanted to know where music came from, and where all the stuff that I loved came from. So you know, I suppose that's something else that maybe set me apart a bit, was that I was keen to know about those connections, you know, those different types of music. But country for me is you know, it's blues music really, and it's soul music. There's an awful lot of soul and country music, and all those, so they all come together, and it's, you know, it's one big kind of mix, I think, and you can hear it in all of it. But country was always a love, and I always loved that old school country. I always loved the Charlie Riches and the Hank Williams and those kind of guys, you know, and because there's something really emotional about it, there's something really sad about it. I think we Irish love an old sad song, you know, and country music is,
Patsy Cline. The word
Elvis, country music is plum pinnacle, like it really is, you know.
Yeah,
we love all that. So no, we're always drawn to country music, but drawn to music in general.
Paul, and you're 100%. I was thinking, you did on your radio program that night, years have just slipped past, but you did one on Johnny Cash. And you probably done a number on Johnny Cash.
No.
Did you ever, and I can't remember, did you ever get to chat with him?
I didn't, and I'd always hoped to chat with Johnny Cash, and I'd had a few feelers out for interviews later in his life, but, you know, he had an awful lot, as you know, an awful lot of health issues towards the end, and an awful lot of problems towards the end. So I had a lot of feelers out for possible interviews with Johnny, but it never happened. I've interviewed his son, John Carter Cash, a few times. Mm-hmm. He kind of looked after the legacy of the Carter franchise, of the Cash franchise now, you know. So no, I never got to meet Johnny, but he's always loved Johnny, and one of the first albums I remember having in the house was San Quentin, the live album, the album he recorded in San Quentin prison. So that's always been one of my favourite albums.
Yeah,
I kind of outlawed Johnny Cash, you know. So
yeah.
Never got to meet Johnny, but God, love him dearly, you know.
You paid a tribute to
this day. All that music, you can still play it now. It still sounds as fresh as the day you heard it, I think. And Johnny Cash is a perfect example of that. Play him now, and it'll still shock you. Play San Quentin, the title track of that live album. It's still shocking how visceral it is, and how in your face it still is, you know. Yeah. Real attitude. And that never ages, you know.
Without a doubt. And I suppose now, moving on, Ralph, first of all, we could talk all day, but moving on to family, are you passing on to your children the love of music? And I know your wife works in radio as well, so are you together passing on your love of music to your kids?
Oh, very much so. I think it's crucial, you know. I have a couple of teenagers in the house now, and I have one still very young. I have one 6-year-old, but I have a couple of teenagers too. And I mean, the work I've done on them since before they were born, actually, even when they were being carried by Kerry, you know.
Yeah.
I was playing them all sorts of music, and deliberately all sorts of music. And now they absolutely love all sorts of stuff that I don't even think they know how they know it, you know. I'll play some old soul track or something, and they'll know it inside out, you know. They'll know every chorus and every verse of these old Stax soul tunes, or they'll know, you know, some old ska tune, because I was playing it to them constantly. I think it's great to have a wide musical knowledge as a young person, because you can always fall back on it, you know. They both love music, the two teenagers now. My daughter Eve as well, she loves it. She's only 6, but the two teenagers, like, I mean, they have all this knowledge of the Beatles and you know, classic rock and roll and country and all this stuff that I think will serve them well. They might not like a lot of it. Obviously, they've got their own music. They're teenagers. They do what they want. And their dad's music is doubtless, you know, an embarrassment to them, you know.
But
I was playing it in the car constantly. I was playing it to them in the house. And that's a great thing. It's great to have that background, I think, you know. It's lovely to know all that music, even without realising you were taking it in, you know.
And without a doubt, I mean, my dad used to listen to Johnny Cash, he used to listen to Hank Williams, he used to listen to Patsy Cline. you know, he used to listen to the Beach Boys. So that's the sort of stuff that does get passed down. So your kids will still listen to it. And my dad's long gone, but I still listen to that music. It's great. Now, moving on sort of quickly, because we're getting to our time. You touched on it there, just the power of music, what sort of emotion it can give you. It can lift you if you're feeling down. It can be emotional, but looking after your own sort of mental health or physical health, Ralph, what do you do anything specific? I know running after children's probably enough physically, you know.
It takes it out of you. Although it's mostly taxi servicing now, as anybody with teenagers will tell you that.
Yes.
So I'm in the car mostly for that. We're very lucky. We live up on the north coast here, so I'd be out every day more or less walking the dog. We've a weakened terrier.
Lovely.
And anybody who has a terrier of any type will tell you they need a lot of walking. So I'm not a big fan of gyms and all of that. I'm really big arsed any of that, to be honest. In the past, I've joined gyms and things. And, probably back in the days when I used to do TV shows, used to feel the pressure to be fitter and be, you know, a leaner machine perhaps, but I can't be bothered with it, to be honest. So I take to the beaches and I walk, and I walk around the north coast there, and I mean, it's no better place for it, to be honest. You've got Port Stewart and Port Rush on your doorstep, and you've all the forests and Ballycastle and all sorts, only 10 minutes away. So I would walk a lot, and I think walking's great for mental health as well as physical health, you know. Nothing better than clearing your head. And walk in the forest or something will clear your thoughts. And, you know, although what I do isn't, I don't consider it real work, you know. There is still a lot of stuff going on in your head, can get kind of crammed full of stuff. And you know, there's a lot of nonsense as well with the media. Mm-hmm. And it's good just to clear your head of all of that and just, you know, get out and sort of get out into nature, you know. So I would always recommend getting out and walking and getting out in fresh air. I'd walk anywhere. It doesn't even have to be kind of glorious coastal walks here. Just getting out and getting a bit of fresh air has been crucial to me. So that's probably about all I do, to be honest, really, fitness-wise. Probably should do more, but I'm out walking because the dog
keeps you going. No,
that's the boss.
Really. Oh, that's more than enough. I mean, that's, you're up the north coast, which is absolutely lovely. And I have a wee terrier, or I had a wee terrier, but I have another wee dog now, a wee terrier, wee Westie. He's 16 years old. Right, Ralph, this is, we're down to our last couple of questions, and I think you've already sort of half answered the last question. You're in your dream job. But if I was to give you £1 million, or you were to win the lottery, and you had something that you would like to do, is there anything out there that you'd like to do? Other than what you're doing, of course, because you're in your dream job.
I do feel kind of that I'm doing exactly what I want to do, really. So if you give me £1 million, Paul, I'd probably just flitter it away down the record shop. You know? Might take me a while, but not that long, you know. Not with the price of vinyl. I'd just flitter it away. I probably do. I like an old pilgrimage. You know, I do like a musical pilgrimage.
Yes.
I did a documentary with the fabulous Ricky Warwick a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Where we went and traced the kind of roots of music from here and how it influenced rock and roll, a thing called Rock and Roll Highway. And we got to go to Elvis's birthplace in Tupelo, got to go to the old shack. Mm-hmm. You know, the shotgun shack, as they call it, because if you fired a shotgun through the front door, it goes out the back. Doesn't hit anybody or anything. So, like, you know, to get to go to those places, I do like a pilgrimage. And I've been out in Memphis and done some kind of soul and rock and roll pilgrimages. I like going to the places where the music I love was born was kind of formed. So I'd probably, if you were giving me an infinite amount of money, I'd probably head off and check out a few old musical sites, you know, a few graveyards of the great musical heroes, you know, and do a bit of that. Because I do, again, it's part of the history thing. I love knowing where music comes from and just getting a feel for the ground where these people stood and where they formed their music, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what was, I watched that program, by the way. I think that was on BBC Two.
It was you, Andy, my man. That's three people.
No, I definitely watched that. And what was Memphis like where the king was born? Wasn't born in Memphis. He lived there.
He was Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an incredible place to go. We went to the hardware store where his his mum bought him his first guitar, a cheap guitar. And in the hardware store, they've got an axe on the floor where he stood, apparently, you know. Brilliant. So, I mean, they're well aware of the Elvis tourist industry. Yeah. But there is, so I love that. I've been a huge fan of the southern states for a long time. And you know, there's a lot that's reprehensible about the southern states, but there's also where there's a southern states, but there's also where there's a welcoming quality to the southern states that reminds me of home a bit as well. Yeah. And Memphis is poor, and Mississippi's poor, and you see an awful lot of grim poverty, but you see an awful lot of great people as well. And you know, through all those places, you'll always find wee bars with great music. And you know, Nashville's a good example. I've been to Nashville a lot of times, and it's great for. You can do the tourist thing in Nashville, but you can also just find a wee bar and watch somebody playing bluegrass and just blow your mind, you know.
Brilliant.
So you'll always find great music in all those places. And I'm a great believer in you know, music being like a universal language. And wherever you are, you'll always find like-minded souls playing tunes. And you know, that's something to celebrate, I think. And places like that now, you know, you can't beat them. Memphis and Nashville and those kind of places. They have a real soul to them. But you know, tourist boards can't cash in on it. They try to, but you know, at the end of the day, it's the soul of the place that lives on. You know? I love them.
Lovely. Okay, Ralph, I think that's us. If you want to just tell us where can the guys find you, if we're looking.
Well, the Radio Ulster show is probably the best. Just to go bbc.co.uk/Radio Ulster, or you can listen on the BBC Sounds app. You can download in the BBC Sounds app wherever you are as well, so you can take programmes away. So just get yourself BBC Sounds, and I'm on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night from 9:30 to 11:00, if, like me, you prefer to listen in real time. I'm very much an analogue man, you know. I'm very much a mono man, so I like to listen when shows are going out. Yeah. So I'm there 9:30 to 11:00, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And there's a lot of other bits and bobs to look out for as well, and different series that have been working on, but that's the main thing, and that's where you'll get me if you want to find me. And if you want to get in touch, you can email me to ralph.mclean@bbc.co.uk, and I'm always happy to hear from everybody in the musical community, you know.
Perfect. Ralph, it's been a pleasure, and thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you.